Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Buddhist teaching is remarkable. It is encouraging. It is shocking. It is profound. And when you first come across it, parts of it just seem absurd. Why do they say that? You wonder, what is this? And one of the key teachings just clearly stands out. And it says, in essence, it says, all beings are inherently enlightened. When you first read that or hear that, you say, it doesn't feel like it. But if it's true, if everybody is inherently enlightened, why do we suffer? And why do we create even more suffering? Why do we squander our inherent enlightenment? In one of his talks, the founder of the Soto Zen school, Dogen, who lived in the 13th century, he pointed out a trap in Zen practice. And that is what he called the desire for fame and gain. And let me read a little bit of what appears in the book Enlightenment Unfolds. People nowadays rarely seek the truth. Deficient in practice and realization, they seek recognition for their effort and understanding. This is delusion on top of delusion. You should abandon such confused thinking. Among those who study the way, it is rare to find determination for true Dharma. From the time of the Tathagata to this day, there have been many who have been concerned with fame and gain in the study of the way. You should know that there is a disease for fame and gain among practitioners of the way. Do not forget the aspiration that arises when you first seek the way. When you arouse the aspiration for enlightenment, you do not seek Dharma in order to be respected by others. You should abandon fame and gain. And without veering off, you should aspire to attain the way. But foolish people, even those with way-seeking mind, quickly forget their original aspiration and hope for offerings from humans and devas. This is a hazard of practice. He calls it a disease. This desire for fame and gain, a disease, a hunger, a deep need, a deep desire. Much like a child who wants a sweet soda or craves sugar. You know, a sugary drink or candy, it tastes very sweet for the moment. But in the long run, it can't satisfy us. then we simply develop a desire for more. And this is a kind of sickness, like he says, a disease. And so, in this writing, or in this talk, Dogen talked about fame and gain in terms of our practice, but, you know, what he talks about applies to all human activities. In Buddhism, there is the teaching of the hungry ghost, the metaphor of the hungry ghost personality. Hungry ghost is one who can never be satisfied and can only experience perhaps very transient moments of excitement, but continues to demand more and more. And this is one of the hungers for fame and gain. And as Dogen pointed out, many practitioners do not recognize their attachment or their addiction, while at the same time, many people do recognize it, but they can't stop. So when we first come to this practice, we come because we want understanding. We seek understanding. We want enlightenment. We want wisdom. And we want to be free from our hungry ghost tendencies. But people are foolish, like he said, and the mind can be very stubborn. And it's quite easy to forget our original way-seeking mind and continually turn towards satisfying our hunger for sweets. How do we overcome this tendency and this trap? We have to continuously renew our original spirit and practice without any idea of gaining something for ourselves. Then we have a chance of making our best effort. So when we say we have to continuously renew, we really need continuous practice. Otherwise, our karmic activity starts up again, even though we don't know it. So we have our practice, and we have this place, and we have each other, which encourages us to sit together. We provide an opportunity to sit together. And if we sit together continuously, we have a chance to recognize our karmic activity, the activity of a self-oriented mind. And when we recognize it, we can make a conscious decision to let go of that desire and return to being alive in the present moment. But even if we don't recognize our karmic activity, nonetheless, we should sit with trust in our practice. And our tendencies will diminish and dissolve without our notice. In other words, the letting go that we talk about in our practice will happen by itself. And that we can call Buddha's activity. So the attitude that we must keep in our practice is to trust Buddha's activity and make it our activity. When we trust our Zazen practice and put our best effort into Zazen practice, we sit with Buddha. It doesn't mean asking Buddha for help. It means that we trust that Buddha is continuously helping. Buddha's activity is always at work through us. By now, everybody knows the famous little story of the young man who came to visit Suzuki Roshi back in the early days of the San Francisco Zen Center in the 60s. He came to Suzuki Roshi one morning and he said, I recently arrived in this country and I want to learn about Zen. Can you teach me about Zen? And Suzuki Roshi simply said to him, I sit every morning and you can join me. Suzuki Roshi was inspiring for his selflessness. And he was the symbol and the meaning of practice. When he said, I sit every morning and you can join me, he was really saying, let Buddha help you. Trust that your activity is Buddha's activity. That is the way to understand what our practice is. So when we practice, and after a time somehow have the feeling that our practice isn't working, it means we haven't yet learned to trust it. It's like saying, why doesn't somebody help me? I've been sitting and nothing happens. Who's withholding the good stuff from me? When we have that kind of attitude, when we feel or complain that our practice isn't working, it means we don't appreciate that help is already here. When we make our best effort, when we make a sincere effort, when we continue our determination, we can appreciate that help is already here, and there's no need to wait for help or to wait for enlightenment. Another example of Dogen's understanding and of his attitude is in the story of the cook. And it's in the book Dogen's, I found it in the book called Dogen's Formative Years in China. Let me read part of the chapter about his encounter with a cook. He had, Dogen had gone from Japan to China in order to meet with the Zen priests who were in China, because Japan had not developed any kind of Zen practice, and he wanted to learn. He was instructed by his teacher to go to China and meet with these people who had been practicing for several centuries. So he took a very difficult and dangerous boat to China, and after it arrived, he stayed on the boat for a while to get accustomed to where he was. And while Dogen was conversing with the head of the Japanese crew off the coast of Qingyuan, an old monk appeared aboard ship. He was the chief cook of Ayuwang Mountain and had come to purchase Japanese mushrooms. Originally from Sichuan province, he had been away from home for 40 years and was now 61 years old. And in the 13th century, 61 years old, he was a senior citizen. After visiting many monasteries in all corners of China, he eventually came to study under Kuyan of Ayuwang Mountain. He had been appointed chief cook during the summer of the previous year. He had traveled 34 to 35 li, or 20 miles, to purchase mushrooms from the Japanese ship to use in making gruel. Dogen was deeply impressed with the devotion of the old monk and asked him to stay the night on the ship. The chief cook declined the offer for fear that it might interfere with the normal procedures at his monastery the following day. Dogen wondered why someone else could not prepare the meal in his place. He asked why a monk as senior as this one remained as chief cook and did not instead engage in sitting in meditation in pursuit of the way. The old man laughed loudly and said to Dogen, "My good man from a foreign land, you still do not comprehend discipline. You still do not know the words." Dogen was startled by the reply and proceeded to ask him the meaning of discipline and of words. The old monk said, "If you still do not understand them, come to Ayuwang Mountain someday and study the meaning of the teachings." Having spoken, he stood up promptly and left before dusk. The chief cook's reply disturbed Dogen profoundly. This marked a clear division between his earlier quest for the final answer to the great doubt and his renewed aspiration for the attainment of the way. The chief cook opened a wholly new path to enlightenment. It was a radical shift from Dogen's intellectual quest for the recognition of the centrality of single-minded discipline. Single-minded discipline is necessary for practice, sometimes known as right effort, or simply knowing how to work. Usually, we want some positive result from the work we do. We want some result from our effort. We want some reward for what we do, either tangible or in somebody's words. We are hungry for appreciation and recognition. And if we start an activity or contemplate an activity, if we cannot anticipate receiving a reward, we usually don't do it. This is the attitude of the hungry ghost. But in our practice, in our serious practice here, we have a different view of our effort. We call it selfless. We don't care about a reward. We don't care about fame or gain. But as Dogen said, this is very unusual. To keep our original pure mind is unusual, like the cook Dogen met. To make an effort for the effort's sake. When we do that, it is Buddha doing the activity. We are Buddha at that time. So fame and gain that Dogen spoke about, it's not just for power or control or being famous. It's not just in the world of politics, in the world of commerce, in the world of business. Fame and gain includes pride, stubborn opinions, doing things only for our self-interest, carelessness, blaming, and being unforgiving. What we call small-minded, clinging to small mind. It is very painful to be a hungry ghost. When we feel the pain of a mind interested in fame and gain, when we feel that pain, we will come to practice. And with determination, we can move towards the selfless mind of that old cook. We can call it the original pure mind or beginner's mind. When we practice, we can return to our beginner's mind ceaselessly. And then we will know how to make a right effort. Then we will be free of a mind of fame and gain. And we will no longer squander our inherent enlightenment. Does anyone have a question tonight? So you're asking that if we come to practice for the wrong reason, is it possible to discover the true motivation for practice? If we're fortunate enough to receive encouragement, encouragement to continue, encouragement that motivates us to continue. Sometimes this encouragement may come from the people you're studying with, the teacher or the Sangha, who provide some uplift, you know, or some new way of seeing, or perhaps a sudden insight will come to your mind randomly. Then you continue and you start to transform your original desire into something less personal. But as Dogen says, that can be very rare. I think people don't often find that kind of supporting environment, the people that will support them, fellow Sangha members who will encourage them, teachers who will encourage them. So that's why we establish a place like this. So that people can come, try the practice, and hopefully see their motivation and see that if they can have, they do have an opportunity to transform personal desire for selflessness. But it's rare. So knowing how rare it can be, we establish places like this so that people can find an opportunity. We run into this difficulty because we feel that we will need other people to help us. We don't understand, we run into trouble when we don't understand that we are needed. We are needed by everyone. This story of the cook illustrates that. He came to get mushrooms. He walked 20 miles to get mushrooms. And he's about to walk 20 miles home because they're depending, the monastery is depending upon him to cook the mushrooms. And things may get confused if he doesn't go back. So his mind is, they need me. I have a responsibility. And when we have that attitude, that we have a responsibility in everything we do, we have a responsibility to others and the whole world, by taking care of everything we do, then there's no problem of feeling of separation. But when we don't appreciate what this life is, what we should do with our life, how we should use it, how we should express it, then we feel there will always be problems and we will need other people to help us. And if we feel the help isn't coming, then it feels like separation. But if we are always with the attitude that I have to help in everything I do, then there's no problem. Helping others, taking care of things to the best of our ability, in very small ways, brings a great sense of joy and dissolves any feeling of separation. We try to practice by taking care of things completely. And there's a great sense of fulfillment when we do that. You know, if after morning zazen, many of us go to the Starbucks over here. Next door to it is a Safeway. You drive over to the Starbucks and you see in the parking lot all these grocery carts. All over. So the store has designated places where they want people to return their carts so they're out of the way. Keep things safe. But people don't do that. They just abandon the cart wherever they choose. Because it's convenient. Because they don't want to spend 30 seconds, you know, to putting the cart back. And when you see these carts, you just can say to yourself, look at all the unhappy people who don't know how to take care of things completely. Just looking for convenience. And leaving a dangerous situation for others. And leaving work for others instead of taking care and helping out. So we see that same kind of thing in small ways. When people don't fully understand that their job in life is to be helpful. And when they're not, they're missing out on something. So yeah, we practice doing things completely. We practice here doing things completely. And we bring that attitude wherever we go.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.